Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. I'm Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and I have a special guest with me today from way across the ocean over in England, Melissa Sanford. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
That's good. I'm excited to have you on a call because, you know, we've met you several times. You've had my wife come on and speak over at your conference over there in Birmingham. And you have lots of similarities to her, where you start off as a CA and then you married two chiropractors, right? and you've also taken a massive leadership role at the UCA, and you've really turned that around. And I always think that if we can get people outside of chiropractic to help with the profession, I really appreciate that. And you're also a mom. And so you have all the things that go along with a mom and a wife, and you're doing amazing things. So we want to kind of dive into your story and find out what your secrets are. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you initially got exposed to chiropractic?
Okay, so when I was a child, my dad went to a chiropractor for back pain. So I'd heard of the word chiropractor, and I kind of knew that chiropractors helped people with bad backs. And he is what I would classify as a maintenance patient. He went every 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks. He would get adjusted, and it would help him stay out of pain. And then when I was about 20, 21, I went traveling. And I was staying in a backpackers in Queensland, and over sort of in the corner of the room, I saw this, group of people that were cooking their dinner, and we were cooking our dinner over here, and, you know, we just got chatting. And it turns out they were some chiropractors from England, and they were also traveling. So the conversation of chiropractic came up, and we probably all had an adjustment that night at some point, as chiropractors do.
Yeah.
And that's how I sort of, you know, met my first chiropractor and found out a little bit more about it. They were telling me more about the philosophy behind it. And then, kind of very long story short, I ended up marrying one of those people that I met that night. His name was Wayne Whittingham, and he really introduced me to chiropractic. So he comes from a family of chiropractors. His father was a chiropractor. His sister's a chiropractor. His brother's a chiropractor. The mother worked in the practice. So, it was fairly fairly much a family thing. But I guess I didn't really understand chiropractic just from him talking to me. I guess you can relate to this with Brandon,
right?
Yeah. So what happened for me was that I just started getting adjusted. I enjoyed getting adjusted. I didn't have any reason, I thought, to get adjusted. If you'd asked me on a scale of 1 to 10 how healthy I was, I probably would have given you a 9. But I was taking medication. I had pleurisy a few times. So I was taking medication for that. And I suffered really badly from rhinitis and hay fever in the springtime. So I had nasal sprays and steroids and things like that. And then usually every winter I would get a bout of tonsillitis. Okay. And I'd been like that for probably 5 or 6 years. So it was my normal, if you like. So I started getting adjusted, and like I said, no neck pain, no back pain, no immediate things that changed for me. But over a period of time, my hay fever, my rhinitis completely went. The hay fever lessened. I went through a winter without a bout of tonsillitis. I've never had pleurisy again. So we're talking, that's 26. How old am I? God, that's terrible. 27 years ago.
But I thought you were 27.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's why I'm double checking.
There you go.
I guess I just kind of woke up one day and thought, oh gosh, I haven't had to blow my nose this morning. And then I just started adding up all these things. Oh, I haven't had a cold, and I haven't had tonsillitis. And then so I just started to become intrigued, I think. And so I, you know, started hanging out with more chiropractors, because that's what happens when you marry one, right?
You're kind of forced to.
Yeah. It's part of the contract, right? You sign here.
Yeah. It's funny. When we first went out with Brandy, when she wasn't really into chiropractic at all, but we were just together and hanging out with chiropractors, she said, they really don't ask you about yourself at all, do they? They just talk about chiropractic. And I was like, I kind of do.
Yeah. Welcome. So I guess started talking to people, read some books. I was very fortunate that the chiropractor that Wayne worked for was very, very much into it being a family practice. So everyone that worked there, if we went to conferences and things like that, she would buy tickets for the spouses. So, you know, I had access to loads of chiropractic conferences. I saw Deepak Chopra speak. All sorts of different things, you know, way back then. And I was just really exposed to a lot of information. And I guess one by one, I just started putting everything together. And I remember it was at a WCCS conference in Sydney in 1992 was when I really, like, the penny dropped for me, where everything from that day forward changed in the way I thought about the world, the way I thought about my health, the way I thought about, you know, health in general, you know.
Was it a point, or was it a speaker, or can you?
It was a speaker. It was Terry Romberg, and it was, you know, it was a very sort of out there vitalistic type of message. And I don't even remember exactly what he said, but I just remember that whole presentation where I went, oh, right, I get it now. We're self-healing, self-regulating little things, you know. Amazing.
How cool. Amazing,
you know, so because I couldn't really quite understand how, if I've got no neck pain and no back pain, and yet I'm getting adjusted and all these things are clearing up, I didn't really get it, you know. Of course, Wayne tried to explain it to me, but, you know, you're never listening to
yourself. You can't listen to your husband, no. That goes both ways. We can't listen to our wife either, right? Ha ha.
Yeah, right. Hey, that's not true, right?
I know.
So I guess from that point on, I got even more excited about chiropractic. And back then I was actually a school teacher, and I moved from New South Wales down to Victoria because Wayne was doing a PhD, and I had to move states. And in those days, you couldn't transfer your job. You had to quit and reapply. So I was doing kind of day-to-day emergency teaching, going from one school to the next, to the next, to the next, and no friends. I was a bit dissatisfied. So I decided to apply for this job as a chiropractic assistant in a chiropractor's office. So it was nobody I didn't know him, you know. I'd met him, you know, once or twice at a seminar or something, but I didn't really know him very well. So I applied for this job and I got it. I lied about the typing. I couldn't type. I lied about that bit. I figured, how much typing can you have to do, you know?
That's so awesome.
Anyway, yeah. In those days, it was an actual typewriter. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I got the job, and And I sort of did it as a little Friday night, Saturday morning thing, thinking it was just a bit of extra pocket money. And I loved it, you know. I ended up giving up teaching about 6 months later, and I took on the job sort of full-time, yeah.
That's awesome. How long did you have that job for?
4 years I worked for him. And in that time, I also had two of my first two children. So I was able to kind of cut back my hours and go, you know, be part-time. And he was great. I took on a lot of the admin in the office, so that after I had my first child, I came back and I was able to bring her to work and, you know, get my work done and have the baby with me. It was amazing, you know. So I worked for him for 4 years, and then we left Australia and came to England after that. So that's kind of how I ended up in chiropractic, really. It was kind of by accident, because I had to leave my job in teaching and I ended up moving states. And, you know, it wasn't ever my burning passion, you know, but I just fell into it. And then I just loved it so much, I didn't go back. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so when you went back to England, did you still work as a CA how long was it? I was just curious on time frame for when you moved to England to when you started working with the UCA.
Oh, okay. So we came to England in 97, and my first husband, Wayne, his family had a practice. So we came in and started working in the family practice. So I was working on the front desk a little bit, not a lot, because I had two small children. But we're between his brother was also working in the practice. So his wife and myself, we sort of managed the practice, worked on the front desk as well a bit. We just kind of made it work between us. We both had young families. So I did that for maybe another 5 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And then we separated, and I then left working in that practice. And that's when I was asked by the UCA if I would come and help get the organization sort of going a little bit. Mm.
That's awesome. So maybe because there's listeners, we already have listeners all over the world. So I was wondering if you could just maybe explain a little bit about the UCA, so people understand kind of what that organization is and kind of what state it was in when you got there.
I was a shoebox, pretty much, of
That's like chiropractic organization.
So I took over from a lady called Sally, who had been doing some administration for about 9 months. She'd been brought in to help out the people that had sort of started it up. And I think it was administered by a chiropractor in the beginning, but it was sort of a bit ad hoc. And so Sally had done her best to sort of try and pull things together. So we had a little mini database, and we had a shoebox of old receipts and a computer and a couple of files. That was pretty much it. I think on the books it said it had 186 members, but I think only about 90 of them were paying. It was just all over the place. So, you know, there was a lot of initial enthusiasm, but like with any of these new groups, there's this sort of initial enthusiasm, and then there's the ego butting, and then it sort of settles down, and then, you know, it gets going. So it was kind of at that stage, I think. So it was just a case early on of really tidying it up and getting some money in the organization. There was no money.
I'm just going to back it up just for a second, because I'm curious on why was the organization formed in the first place? Just kind of, if you can describe just to people, some people might not know what the state of chiropractic is like in England.
So it was set up because there was a group of chiropractors who just felt that the vitalistic principles weren't being represented by the major organization here, which has been going, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but 30 plus years. It's been going for a long time. And it was in existence before the regulatory body. So if you wanted to sort of have some protection over yourself as being a chiropractor in England, you joined them. They gave you your insurance, and they also were able to sort of give you some guidance and protection in terms of, you know, of your profession. But then the GCC came into being, which is our regulatory body, which gave the major organisation, the BCA, less power, if that makes sense. They were no longer sort of had any governing power.
Okay.
So they just really became a membership organisation, like we are. So there's people in there that were really wanting change and wanting the vitalistic principles to be upheld, and the organization at the time was going down a very mechanistic route. So that's kind of how it started. There was a group of about 20 to 25 chiropractors and some chiropractic spouses that got together in the north of England. They had a meeting and they decided they would form the UCA. I was not part of that. I heard about it. I may have been having a baby at that point. That was usually
often. You're busy doing those things.
or had just had one, so couldn't travel. I can't remember. But my brother-in-law went to it. He was actually at the first meeting. So we knew about it, but I wasn't involved in the early days. And they, you know, worked very hard. There was a small group of people that worked very hard on getting, you know, rules and regulations written up and all sorts of things. And then we just got going. And it was, like I said, in the beginning, it was all very exciting and enthusiastic, particularly people that didn't feel represented over here, you know, jumped very quickly. Mm-hmm. But then when I took it over, what I'd noticed was there was a lot of movement at the end of the year with people leaving and new people joining. And that was really because we had a lot of people from overseas that would join us. Mm-hmm. So they would come and work in England for a couple of years and they'd leave. Okay. So we didn't really have a strong, you know, base.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we had somewhat a strong base, but we were just getting, there was a lot of movement. We'd have 50 people come in, 50 people go out, 50 people come in, 50 people come out. So we just made the decision that really what we needed was to grow it from within the UK. As much as we love these other people coming to work, mm-hmm. you know, that can't be where we're putting all our eggs. You know, we need right. to grow it within the UCA.
So that's what we did. So when you came in and just kind of did an assessment and saw that you had like, whatever, 140 members, 90 of them paid. How did you initially attack that? Was that like a daunting task? Like, did you guys have a goal or a sustainability goal?
The goal was to get some money in the bank. I think it was that simple. I'd like to be paid at the end of the month. So
yeah, exactly.
Here's what we're going to do.
Inspiration or desperation? A little desperation always gets you going.
It was just a case of, you know, sending people invoices. I don't think they weren't paying because they didn't want to pay. They just didn't know.
Right. It's just unorganized.
Yeah. There was just no structure. Mm. So we just set up a structure and invoice people properly, made sure they paid, chased them, that sort of thing, built up the funds. And then we sort of decided to start running events. Because we knew that that was a way that we could reach and talk to other chiropractors who were also a little bit lost, were sitting over here in this camp, but not necessarily completely aligned with it, but unsure about this new crazy bunch of mavericks over here who, you know, don't really want to leave this security over here and go over here, you know. Right. So we started putting on events, which grew very, very quickly. We run the largest event in the UK every year, our October one that's just coming up this weekend. We have 560 registered again this year. We had that last year. I think the first one we did was about 100 people, which actually is not too bad, even considering we were a small organization. It's not too bad to get 100 people, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Because as you know, running events is not easy.
No. Yeah, I know.
It looks easy on the outside, right?
Yeah. Well, like we always say, right before it starts, you vow you'll never do one again. And then when everybody's all inspired, because again, I think part for me, what changed me in chiropractic was events. When I was immersion in the immersion around the speakers, around the people, that really got me on fire. And it sounds like the same thing for you, is that you knew about chiropractic, but you didn't really get it until you're in an event, right? And no. So I think it's about recreating that atmosphere so yeah. that those people that are kind of like, well, it sounds so interesting, but I'm not, like, even for you, just like Brandy, your husband was a chiropractor, you're getting adjusted, but you still just didn't quite get it. And so.
And I had massive health transformation. Like, yeah. And I still didn't really understand the whole thing, you know? I was like, and this is what I say to people now when I, you know, if I do CA training or anything, I'm like, or even talking to young chiropractors, it's like, you can give your best health talk and your best report of findings and the greatest new patient exam ever.
Yeah.
They do not understand a word of what you've said.
That's totally like, true.
I was married to one and I had major health changes and I didn't get it for 6 months. And I'm not dumb, then what hope have your patients got? You know, like you can't just rely on that visit 1, 2, 3 thing, you know, that it's important, don't get me wrong, but you got to take them on a journey, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. And anyway, we say even chiropractors have gone to school and and then they're out in practice and they still have a hard time getting it sometimes until they kind of can link all those pieces together. Yeah. So that's great. So you've grown that. And again, you're at our mastermind in Toronto, and you had a little talk about how you needed to raise your membership a bit just so that you have a little bit more say. Can you just kind of describe how that works in the UK?
Yeah. So there's 4 member organizations. So chiropractors can join the MCA, which is the McTominay Chiropractic Association. They can join the BCA, which is the British Chiropractic Association. They're the longest standing one. And then there's the SCA, which is the organization that Ross McDonald is the president of. So they were more formally aligned with the BCA years ago, but I'm not so sure they are anymore. They're very much their own separate sort of group, and they represent all of the chiropractors up in Scotland, because Scotland's a separate country, right?
Yeah. So, my roots are from Scotland. We have to be our independence.
So there are some different rules and regulations that apply in that country, and so there are some things that, you know, we certainly can't advise on for members. So and then there's our organization. So there's the 4 organizations. 3 of us formulate an alliance. So there's the MCA, SCA, and us, and we formulate what's called the Alliance of UK Chiropractors. So when it comes to certain issues in the profession, we will often group together on a decision that goes either back to the regulatory body or a media thing or something like that. So we're working more and more together. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy to stay separate for now. But together we are actually larger than the largest organization, if that makes sense.
That's awesome.
So I think for me, in terms of growing and growing our numbers, is that, you know, we are representing chiropractic and the vitalistic principles. That's what we're representing. But we're also representing people in a way where we're not dictating you have to practice like this or you have to practice like that. Like, you know, we have members who will have an ultrasound machine in their practice. Like, that's not my bag. Yeah. But if you're being safe and ethical and, you know, it's, and you're getting people well, then, you know, I don't know. I think we've got to have some room within the profession to let that pendulum swing a little bit. And I think when we don't do that, that's when we get all these segregations. Right. So I think what we are looking to do is to really say, yes, our focus is vitalism.
Yeah.
And the chiropractic principles, the 33 principles. But we're also, you know, looking to have more of a broad church, if that makes sense, where we want people to be members of ours and have, they don't feel like they have to practice in an open room environment, you know, only adjusting C1 and only never using an activator or never doing this. And, you know, that's just, I think, in my mind, being no different to another group over here who's saying you can only practice in an MSK model.
Right, 100%. It's a limiting kind of scope, right? Yeah.
So I guess that's the message we're really trying to push forward now, is that, you know, we're called United for a reason. We're a United Chiropractic Association. We want to unite chiropractors in the same direction. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally does. So anybody who's listening who's in England, where are your members from? Like, are they from outside of England as well?
We have overseas members who can pay a subscription which gives them discounted rates on seminars. It also gives them a magazine every quarter, and then they get our regular electronic mailers we do every fortnight, which just keeps them up to date with what's going on over here.
Okay, that's right. So everybody out there, you can make sure you're a member.
Yeah.
now taking it into the practicing chiropractor's perspective, is I know now you have it's called the Vital CA, right? The seminar that you're doing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I was wondering, you know, chiropractors come out of school just like me, no clue about hiring staff, no clue about that. I was wondering if you could just give maybe, and again, there would be some chiropractors listening to this that just started out, and I was wondering if you just give some tips on on with hiring or managing or inspiring or training staff, or some of the things you see the most common errors that are made out there, and just share them with our listeners.
I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they hire a CA for their skills and not for who they are. I know Brandy talks about this. I'm totally on the same page with Brandy. It's about hiring a person and a personality for your front desk, not the best typist or the best, let's face it, being a CA is not difficult. It's not a difficult job. You do need to have a reasonable amount of ability to spell and add up. That's pretty essential. But aside from that, you don't need a university degree. You don't need any high qualifications or anything. It's a job you could teach pretty much anyone. But you can't teach someone to be a hard worker and to go the extra mile and to have great customer service. Like, I think that is just part of who you are. I'm more into hiring people than skills.
100%.
That's very important in a chiropractic office. And then in terms of training them, I think sometimes CAs are given a half an hour show round of the reception area and left alone forever. And then they'll send them to one of my courses or somebody like Brandy's or whatever. And it's like, oh, can you fix my CA? It's like, it's too late.
That's so funny.
There needs to be a very basic manual for the front desk, and it needs to be checklist, and you've got to check in and make sure they're doing those things, because cleaning up a mess after you've had a bad CA is a nightmare. And then in terms of education, I think I was very, very lucky in my first job. The first chiropractor I worked for, Mark Navin, I love him. He pretty much taught me everything I know about chiropractic, about raising children in a chiropractic lifestyle. He was just a man of principle, and he was interested in me, and he was interesting, if that makes sense. I could ask him anything. We talked a lot about life and children and health and how chiropractic, fitted in all of that. And I sometimes think that's a mistake that a lot of chiropractors make. They talk about the cinema or what they have for dinner on Saturday night or where their next holiday is going to be, and they don't talk about chiropractic with their CAs. And you have such a short amount of time that you spend with them that it's really what you should be talking about. And just asking them questions like, what did you think about Mary that came in with XYZ? And what do you think about this? And, be interested in them and interested in their learning.
Now, we always like to take it back to skill, because I totally felt like an underdog. And you come out of school and you're all of a sudden hiring staff. And I was laughing when you said you should have maybe some kind of manual, because I think my first three CA. Oh, first, my first CA was my mom.
That's a nice one.
Well, yeah, it was really funny because we didn't really balance any day. And I would ask, I'd recommend a treatment plan, and she or a care plan, and she would disagree with it.
Oh, awesome! So that was a really good decision of yours, wasn't it?
But again, it was good and bad in the same breath. But when we did hire our first CAs, the first three of them all cried on the first day because it was so unorganized. So what do you think the first couple steps a chiropractor could do just to get a little bit more organized or at least plan for when they're hiring? Or, for example, I have a coaching client who purchased the practice and inherited CAs that might not have been a nice match for him. And then he was scared to hire someone new because he's never done it before. So maybe you got some couple tips on what you should do for your mindset, or how can you get prepared for that?
Prepared for hiring?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. You know what? Hiring's never easy. And I think it's something that nobody really enjoys, if I'm honest. I think you just got to be clear on who you want to spend your time with in your office, really. I think it's so important, because in many, many chiropractors' offices, it's you and the CA, and that's it.
Great.
And so, you've got to spend a lot of time with these people. So it's got to be somebody that you have some kind of connection and affinity with. They do have to look right for your office as well. I know we've always done group interviews, so we would just have, people sitting there, and you could instantly cross people off by who was not going to look right in your office.
Yeah.
And that's not really whether they're this or that. That's just, you know, what looks right in your office, right?
Right. It's just their energy.
Their energy. Yeah. And, you know, like for me, it's whether they've cleaned their shoes. You know, like that's, if you don't clean your shoes, you're not really looking after yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Turn up an interview with dirty shoes, you know? So, like, that's one of my things. I'm not saying that's going to be important to everybody, but that's a thing for me. If you've got dirty shoes in my office, you're not going to fit in, you know? Yeah. So little things like that. And then I think personality profiling is also an easy thing to do. There's so many of them on the internet. Mm-hmm. But work out what kind of personality you work best with. If you're an introvert, it's, you know, not great to have another introvert on the front desk.
Yeah.
You know, the basic sorts of things like that. But I think you've got to have a plan. I think sometimes Kairos go into hiring with no plan. Mm-hmm. So they don't even consider, I want somebody who doesn't talk too much. I want somebody who's going to be able to do this or that. You know, write yourself a list of the things that are important to you. Mm-hmm. For me, that's it. Start with a plan, you know, at least. Do a group interview. Whittle out the people. Then you haven't had to sit there for half an hour asking this person questions that you know you have no intention of hiring.
Yeah, totally.
You know, just cut that out, you know. So, and then only really bring people back for individual interviews that that you know you have that energy that's going to be right for your office.
That's
and
awesome.
Then it's a case of just working out from there that, you know, whether you're going to gel, I think, you know. Anyone who's applied for that job, like you say, once you've worked out where they can spell and add up.
I think it's just a lot of support, right? We've done that well. And I'm so, and again, I always want to apologize all to the chiropractic spouses out there, right? Because they have to put up with us chiropractors. I feel kind of bad for them, but we appreciate you so much. And when Brandy comes in and now we do, like we do monthly training, like it's just the ongoing training. And I know what we did before was, you know, like you said, you'd either do the quick walk around and they'd learn through trial and error. And that would be about it. So I think bringing them to seminars is huge as well. Because
yeah, it is huge. And also, I think as a chiropractor, you need to learn how to work your own front desk. I think that's one of the big failings that people make. They start up an office and they bring somebody else in to figure that out. I think as a chiropractor, you need to figure that out. So you know how the system works. You know how the filing system works. Even if you get somebody to help you set that up, if it's not natural for you to do that, get somebody to help set it up. But you need to be able to operate that so that you're able to see when it's not working. I think that's sometimes that's happening. I see that a lot where a chiropractor will be having some issues and I'll ask them some questions and it's very clear they have no idea what goes on behind that desk.
Right. And then if they leave, then they're totally up the creek without a paddle.
Totally up the creek. They can't train a new person because they don't even know
passwords.
So then guess what? Yeah, passwords, right. So then guess what happens is, you know, Betty leaves and then, you know, Joe comes in to take over and Joe thinks, well, I don't like Betty's system, so I'm going to redo this. And then Joe leaves and then Mary comes in and Mary goes, oh, I don't really like these systems. So Mary does her old other system. So before you know it, you've got a total mess.
Yeah.
Total mess. You know, that I see a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is that a lot of chiropractors just have to say, you know what, you just have to suck it up because they don't want to do it because it's not that fun. It's not enjoyable, but it's such an important part and we've also heard of chiropractors who staff, because they're so disconnected, staff can all of a sudden start laundering money. Like there's, I've heard so many different examples where when you totally lose control, you're just leaving it open to get into serious trouble.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You need to be able to cash up or, you know, book appointments, find files. You need to be able to do everything.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about a mom, because again, you're a mother. You're a mother. Mm-hmm. You're raising children in a chiropractic lifestyle in a crazy world that has a totally different paradigm than us. And how is that? Because there's, you know, there'll be a lot of people if they're having children, you know, we make a lot of different decisions than other people do. And how do you handle the stress of not being kind of going with the herd?
I just don't go with the herd rather than try and handle it. I guess that's my easiest answer. I remember going to my first mother's group when I had Bonnie. I think she was maybe 6 or 8 weeks old. And it's just, you're kind of told that's what you should do. You turn up to this coffee morning. So I turned up there. And yeah, I very quickly realized that this was not going to be for me, you know, because there's the conversations around the vaccines and then the food that comes out and the bottles, you know, I'm breastfeeding. And then, you know, I use cloth nappies, they're using disposables. Like, you know, I could just very quickly think, I'm not aligned with any of these people. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of husband bashing that goes on there too, you know, because what happens too when women have children is they're stuck with this child and it's hard work. You know, it is hard work, especially your first one when you know, it's lovely, don't get me wrong, but it's hard work and you're no longer getting dressed up and going out to the office or you're meeting your girlfriend in town or, you know, you've just got this thing you've got to take everywhere with you. So, so there's some resentment that comes in to the husband that just shoots off to work and escapes, you know, you're like, it's all right for you. You're escaping. You know? So, and I just thought, you know, that's not really for me either. I'm not into the husband bashing thing. So, I just didn't really engage. And I found that I was fine staying out of it. I found some of my own friends that, you know, at least respected my opinion. They might not necessarily get on board totally with my philosophy of raising my children, but yeah, I just really didn't get into those clubs. I didn't put my kids in nursery. I just didn't do any of that. If I had to work, we had a childminder that would come to the house. And so these were the rules and they were the rules. So we just didn't engage in it very much. It was actually when my children went to high school that it became more of an issue. It was when they first realized that other people don't get adjusted, that people take medication like every day. So it was navigating them through those years that I found a little bit more challenging, because before then I could protect them, you know, and I was teaching them about good nutrition and, you know, that we don't do this for that and this for that and da 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 da. But they were protected. But it's when they go to senior school that it's a little bit more difficult. And you just have to hold on tight and hope for the best.
And do you do, and again, like me and Brandy say, we have no street cred when it comes to kids, right? But but do you have, like, as a family, do you have like a check-in times with your kids? Like, so when you know they're in that, do you have certain times that you're always just making sure you're checking in and making sure that everything's good?
I think I try and spend one-on-one time with my children as much as I can. I have six of them, as you know, and so that can be a little bit crazy to, especially if you're a quieter personality in amongst that, to be heard. So when I go to Australia, for instance, to visit my family, I usually will only take one child with me. So that's very, it's a long time away. And it's very focused time. I'll go for days out with them on their own. You know, whether it's just lunch or a shopping trip or something, and really just try and talk to them in part of a normal process, if that makes sense, rather than sitting down like, right, so today's check-in hour, you know, and putting them under that pressure, you know. Walking to school is a great one too. I see less and less people do that. Most people are driving their kids to school. I know where you guys are, you have the yellow buses and stuff, but here we don't have that. So I walk the children to school, and that is a great half an hour of talking time. I know Jen Barham Floriani posted something about walking her dog recently, and that's where she gets loads of gems from her kids. And I would agree with that. It's just that time where there's nothing to do. You're not going anywhere specifically. I mean, obviously you're walking to school, but you're not sort of, you know,
no distractions.
Rock concert or a this or a that, where that's going to be the topic of conversation. It's just everyday life. And I guess it's just paying attention to things that crop up then that you might need to talk about later, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And does that kind of go, does that go a little bit similar too with marriage? Because, you know, as being a chiropractor's spouse, whether it's out there, whether it's a male or a female, tell me a little bit of the challenges there or some of the things you've done to really kind of, as a husband and wife, try to stay checked in so that resentment doesn't kick in or kicks in less?
Yeah, kicks in less. Well, I have been married twice, so I'm not quite sure I was too successful the first time. But so I guess with my husband now, we've been married 12 or 13 years. And we try and go out at least once a week, just the two of us, even if it is just for a walk, even if it's not, you know, dinner, even if it's just a walk where we're out of the house so there are no distractions. We don't do anything too serious, like, you know, the kids are off the table for discussion or chiropractic's off the table for discussion. We wouldn't have anything else to talk about. No, that's not true. But yeah, so we do try and do that once a week. We share our childcare. So when I'm not at home, which is right now, I've been at work all day today, he has the children. And when he's working, I have the children. So I don't feel we have that same kind of resentment that can happen in some relationships because we both work and we both look after the children. So we both get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're sharing.
He's been away working in Spain and so he's sort of commuting and is away during the week. And when he got home on Thursday, I just said to him, I need some time out. So I'm going to just book a day with my girlfriend on Saturday. And I caught a train and went and had lunch with her, did some shopping, came home. And there was no question of, oh, well, I haven't seen you for 2 weeks and Like he knows what it's like to have the kids constantly and work for 10 days with no help. He gets that because he's done it. You know?
Yeah, that's huge.
So, yeah. So it's about being able to ask. I'm better at asking for that now. I would have instead maybe stomped around a little bit. No, I'm so tired. And oh my God, life's so hard. And whereas I just sort of thought I need some time out. And so I asked him for it.
So it's like, it's nice. Again, sometimes it's uncomfortable, but to be a little bit more direct with your partner and just say, tell them what you need. Like,
yeah.
Instead of hope that they guess.
Yeah. Like, you know, you've left that laundry on the stairs.
That's our story where Brandy left it out there for a week. That's why I said. I only walked over for a week and then she yelled at me and freaked out. And then I'm like, what laundry? The one you walk over every day. I'm like, why didn't you just ask me to bring it upstairs? It was her experiment to see how long I'd leave it there. And I'm like,
I have done the same experiments.
And I always tease her. I said, you're booby trapping me to fail. Like what? You're setting me up. So anyway, but now I'm, don't worry, I'm on patrol. So if I'm looking out for the laundry basket, so I'm making sure that we bring
that. Oh, upstairs. That's funny.
So just in closing, you know, again, the whole podcast is named Breaking Through the Underdog Curse. And so for people that might be out there feeling like they're an underdog, feeling like they, you know, or have the odds against them, do you have any parting words of advice that they might be able to take to their life?
Oh gosh, you know, I was thinking about this all day today that you're going to ask me some sort of underdoggy question and what would I say? You know what? I don't think I've ever felt like an underdog. And I don't know if that's just because of my personality. Because if I sat here and told you the history of my life, there's some underdog stuff in there, you know, and I guess for me, you know, everybody has stuff. Mm-hmm. Everybody has stuff. And just remembering that and realizing that and not getting into a headspace of woe is me and the world's against me and this is happening to me. Nothing's ever happening to me.
Right.
And I think for me, that's where I try and stay in the moment. Every day is just a day. Tomorrow's another day. And you can only do the best with what you have at any given time.
Right. So kind of like there's certain things you can't control, right? So just understanding.
No, you can't. And so there's just no point even putting your head over there, you know? Worrying about something doesn't change it, you know? It just makes you feel anxious and unhappy. So yes. I just try not to do that. And I think... yeah, it's what I try and teach my children anyway, is certainly that, you know, you can only be responsible for yourself, your behavior, and the way you react to situations. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think those are pretty sage words of wisdom. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I also just want to thank you for all you do for chiropractic, because I just know, just with my wife being so involved in leadership and caring so much about the profession, that you go above and beyond. You know, chiropractic needs you and needs other people like that to step up too. So just thank you for everything that you've been doing for the profession.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I love it. It's a great profession. I love chiropractors, crazy people. But I love every one of you, and I'm feel very honored and blessed to have been part of this profession for as long as I have.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much. And everybody, there's lots of tips out there about staffing. And if you want to take a leadership role and help get Vitalistic Chiropractic out there, we had some tips for that as well. And so just remember to get out there, use these skills, and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.